There's so much to know about classical music, but you don't need to sit through a lecture to enjoy it or love it. Come to Northwest Public Radio every weekday from 9 to 4 to hear wonderful melodies that speak to your imagination and your heart with just the right amount of information to keep it interesting. You can also listen at nwpr.org.
Oh, this second hour of Inland Folk is a production of Northwest Public Radio on the campus of Washington State University. I want to talk to you about Alice's Restaurant for a second. Alice's Restaurant, this is a story that Arlo Guthrie wrote based kind of on an experience that he had, a couple of experiences, that he then amplified and turned into a story, turned into, in effect, to some extent, a sort of a late 60s tall tale, because he exaggerated certain things and made light of other things almost like a little kid would. Arlo Guthrie, the son of Woody Guthrie, who actually never saw much of Woody by the time he was maturing. Although there is a scene in the movie where he goes to visit Woody in the hospital. Woody Guthrie, of course, by that time had Huntington's chorea, and it was pretty debilitating. And there's a scene in the movie where Pete Seeger and Arlo are playing and singing for Woody, some of Woody's songs. And anyway, Arlo Guthrie was influenced by Ramblin' Jack and Dylan and people like that. And he was quite young when he did Alice's Restaurant, 18, 19 years old, did it live. And it's a story of an incident that happened in his life with some friends in the town of Stockbridge, Massachusetts, in Alice's Restaurant. And Alice's Restaurant has now been purchased by Arlo, and it's a youth center, the Rising Sun thing. And that's the record label that all of Arlo Guthrie's material is on. And the cool thing about this particular version of Alice's Restaurant, which is a story that talks about the draft movement and it talks about laws and it talks about the absurdity of certain laws and this kind of thing and the disparity between criminals and non-criminals and all kinds of stuff going on here. But the thing is Warner Brothers would not release the original Alice's Restaurant recording to Arlo when the contract was up and the copyrights were done and everything. Warner Brothers didn't want to let go of it. And Warner Brothers was being a typical jerk record label like A&M was for the Irish Rovers and stuff, and Columbia for the Clancy Brothers. So they made a new recording. They just took all the material that was from the original Alice's Restaurant, and Arlo got together with a band and recorded a whole new album of all the material that was on the original Alice's Restaurant and brought it out on their label. So he brought everybody back together into the Alice's Restaurant, into the actual restaurant, and a live audience, and re-recorded the whole thing. And so it is an audience that has heard this thing many, many times. And he added a few things and called it the Alice's Restaurant Massacre Revisited. And it's really neat the way he does it. There's some wonderful anecdotal things going on here. And I think this is worth listening to. And it really is a look at some of the things that were going on in the 60s and some of the things that needed to be pointed out. And he just revisits that. And it's quite fun. Arlo Guthrie, The Alice's Restaurant Massacre Revisited.
Before, I know I have, 'cause this song is called Alice's Restaurant. It's about Alice and the restaurant. But Alice's Restaurant was never the name of a restaurant. That was always just the name of this song. And I guess that, well, that's probably why I still call this song Alice's Restaurant. You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. Walk right in, it's around the back, just a half a mile from the railroad track. And you can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. I wasn't gonna sing the song tonight or this decade, but I realized sometime earlier this year that it had been 26 years since this come out as a movie, and it was 2 years before that that it came out as a record, and it was 2 years ago on the record which means it was like 30 Thanksgivings ago, 30 years ago on Thanksgiving, when my friend and I decided to go up and visit Alice at the restaurant. But Alice didn't used to live in a restaurant. She used to live in the church nearby the restaurant, in the bell tower, with her husband Ray and Facha the dog. And living in the bell tower like that, they used to have a lot of room downstairs where the pews used to be. Seeing as how they took out all of the pews and having all that room, they decided that they didn't have to take out their garbage for a long time. We got up there, found the place was filled with garbage, and we decided it'd be a friendly gesture for us to take the garbage down to the town dump. So we took the half a ton of garbage, put it in the back of a red VW microbus, took shovels and rakes and implements of destruction and headed on toward the town dump. We got there. There was a sign, a chain across the road, and the sign said, "Closed on Thanksgiving." We had never heard of a dump closed on Thanksgiving before. And so with tears in our eyes, we drove off into the sunset, looking for another place to put the garbage. We didn't find one till we come to a side road. And off of the side of the side road, there was a 15-foot cliff. And at the bottom of the cliff, there was another pile of garbage. We decided that one big pile would be better than two little ones. And rather than bring that one up, we decided to throw ours down. That's what we did. Drove back to the church, had a Thanksgiving dinner that couldn't be beat. Went to sleep and didn't get up until the next morning, when we got a phone call from Officer Obie. He said, "Kid, we found your name on an envelope at the bottom of a half a ton of garbage. Just wanted to know if you had any information about it." And I said, "Yes, sir, Officer Obie. I cannot tell a lie. I put that envelope under that garbage." It was after speaking to Obie for about 45 minutes on the telephone that we finally arrived at the truth of the matter. And Obie said we had to go down and pick up the garbage, and we also had to go down and talk to him at the police officer station. Now, friends, there was only one of two things that Obie could have done at the police officer station. And the first thing was he could have given us a medal for being so brave and honest on the telephone, which wasn't very likely. Hey, we didn't expect it. And the other possibility was that he could have bawled us out and told us never to be seen driving garbage around the vicinity again, which is what we expected. But when we got to the police officer station, there was a third possibility that we hadn't counted on. And we was both immediately arrested, handcuffed. And I said, "Obie, I don't think I can pick up the garbage with them handcuffs on." He said, "Shut up, kid. Get in the back of the patrol car." And we sat in the back of the patrol car and drove to the, quote, scene of the crime, unquote. Friends, I want to tell you about the town of Stockbridge, Massachusetts, where this was happening. They got three stop signs, two police officers, and one police car. But when we got to the scene of the crime, there was five police officers and three police cars, being the biggest crime of the last 50 years, and everybody wanted to get in the newspaper story about it, and they was using up all kinds of cop equipment they had hanging around the police officer station. They was taking plaster, tire track, footprints, dog smelling prints. They took 27 8x10 color glossy pictures with circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one explaining what each one was to be used as evidence against us. They took pictures of the approach, the getaway, the northwest corner and the southwest corner, and that's not to mention the aerial photography. And it was after the ordeal, we went back to the jail. Obie said he was going to put us in a cell. He said, "Kid, I'm going to put you in a cell. Give me your wallet and your belt." And I said, "Obie, I can understand you wanting my wallet, so I don't have any money to spend in a cell, but what do you want my belt for?" And he said, "Kid, we don't want any hangings." And I said, "Obie, did you think I was going to hang myself for littering?" Obie said he was making sure, and friends, Obie was, because he took out the toilet seat so I couldn't hit myself over the head and drown. Took out the toilet paper so I couldn't bend the bars. Roll the toilet paper out the window, slide down the roll, have an escape and get away. Obie was making sure all right. And it was about 4 or 5 hours later that Alice, remember Alice? This is still the song about Alice. And anyway, Alice come by and with a few nasty words to Obie on the side, she bailed us out of jail. We went back to the church, had another Thanksgiving dinner that couldn't be beat. Went to sleep and didn't get up until the next morning, when we all had to go to court. We walked in, sat down. Obie come in with the 27 8x10 color glossy pictures with the circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one, explaining what each one was to be used as evidence against us. And he sat down. A man come in. He said, "All rise." And we stood up, and Obie stood up with the 27 8x10 color glossy pictures, and the judge walked in with a CNI dog. Sat down. We sat down. Obie looked at the CNI dog, and then at the 27 8x10 color glossy pictures, and looked at the CNI dog. And Obie began to cry, because Obie come to the realization that this was a typical case of American blind justice, and there was no way the judge was going to look at the 27 8x10. Well, it didn't matter, because we was fined $25 each, and we had to pick up the garbage in the snow. That's not really what I come to talk about so much. I just thought I'd mention it, because I know there's probably some people sitting here tonight thinking this is some kind of nostalgic ballad or something, and I hope so. But you never know, they still got that building down in New York City on Whitehall Street, and others like it all around America, and that's where you used to have to go get injected, inspected, detected, infected, neglected, and selected. And I remember I had to go in there one morning a long time ago for a physical examination. So I got good and drunk the night before, 'cause I wanted to feel my best when I went in that morning. I mean, I wanted to feel, I wanted to look, I wanted to be like the all-American kid. And when I went in that morning, I was hung down, I was brung down, I was hung up. I was all kinds of mean, nasty, ugly-looking things. I walked in, I sat down. "Give me a piece of paper," said kid. "See the psychiatrist, room 604. I went up there. I said, "Shrink, I want to kill. I mean, I want to kill. I want to see blood and gore and guts and veins in my teeth. Eat dead bird bodies. I mean, kill, 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 kill." And I started jumping up and down, yelling, "Kill, kill." And he started jumping up and down with me. And we was both jumping up and down, yelling, "Kill, kill, kill, kill." Till the sergeant come over, pinned a medal on me, sent me down the hall, said, "You're our boy." I didn't feel real good about it, but I proceeded on down the hall, getting more injections, inspections, and all kinds of stuff that they was doing to me at the thing there. I was there for 2, 3, 4, 5 hours. I was there for a long time, going through all kinds of mean, nasty, ugly things. They was inspecting, injecting every single part of me, and they was leaving no parts untouched. But I proceeded through until I finally come to see the very last man. Walked up. I said, "What do you want to see me about?" He said, "Kid, we only have one more question. Have you ever been arrested?" And I told him the story of Alice's Restaurant Massacre with five-part harmony, full orchestration, all kinds of the phenomenon. He stopped me right there. He said, "Kid, did you go to court?" And I told him the story of the 27 8x10 color glossy pictures with the circles and arrows and the paragraph on the back of each one. He stopped me again. He said, "Kid, I want you to go over, sit down on that bench that says Group W." Now, kid. I went over there. Group W. Group W is where they used to put you if you may not have been moral enough to join the army after committing your special crime. And there was all kinds of mean, nasty, ugly-looking people on the bench. There was mother rapers and father stabbers. And father rapers. I mean, there was father rapers sitting there on the bench next to me. I mean, he was mean, nasty, ugly, horrible, crime-fighting guys. And the meanest, ugliest, nastiest one, the meanest father raper of them all, was coming over to me, and he sat down next to me and said, "Kid, what'd you get?" I said, "I didn't get nothing. I had to pay $25 and pick up the garbage." He said, "Kid, what was you arrested for?" And I said, "Littering." And they all moved away from me on the bench there until I said, "And creating a nuisance." And then they all come back and shook my hand. And we had a great time on the bench talking about crime, mother stabbing, father raping. We were smoking cigarettes and all kinds of stuff, having a good time. Till the sergeant come over, had some paper in his hand. He held it up, he went like this. He said, "Kids, this piece of paper's got 37 words for them sentences. One, no time to crime, detail crime, ain't got a thing to say, pretend tune about the crime, the rest of the name kind of thing got to say." And he talked for 45 minutes, but nobody understood a word he said. But we had fun filling out the forms and playing with the pencils on the bench. And I wrote down the massacre like I was supposed to, and I put down my pencil, turned over the piece of paper, and there on the other side of that piece of paper, in the middle of the other side, underlined and capitalized, away from everything else on the other side, read the following words: "Kid, have you rehabilitated yourself?" I went over to the sergeant. I said, "Sergeant, you got a lot of damn gall to ask me if I've rehabilitated myself. I mean, I'm sitting here on the Group W bench. I'm sitting here on the Group W bench. Because you want to know if I'm moral enough to join the army, burn women, kids, houses, children, villages, after being a litter bug." He said, "Kid, we don't like your kind. We're going to send your fingerprints off to Washington. And friends, somewhere in Washington, enshrined in a little folder, is a study in black and white of my fingerprints. They're still there. The only reason I'm singing you the song tonight is because you may know somebody in a similar situation sometime. Even some of you could be in a situation like it sometime sooner than you're sitting here thinking about right now. If you ever find yourself in a situation like that and you don't know what to do, there may be only one thing that, well, there may not actually be a hell of a lot you can do at all, but there's something you can try, and that's to be wherever it is you're supposed to be. You just go down there, you sit there, you ask to see the shrink, you go up there, you say like, 'Oh, shrink, excuse me, man, but you can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant,' and walk out. Imagine one person, I mean, even today, walking in singing some Alice's restaurant, walking out. They're going to say, 'Hey, that guy's 30 years too late. Get that guy out of here.'" Imagine two of them walking in hand, singing in harmony. I don't care what the president says. Unfortunately, to a lot of people, that's still a problem. Imagine three of them. They might think of some kind of organization or something. So you can imagine like 50 people, maybe 50 people a day, walking in, singing some Alice's restaurant, walking out. Friends, they might think it's a movement. And most of them be too young to know what a movement was. That's what it was. It was the Alice's restaurant anti-massacre movement. That's what it was, and that's what it is. And I guess that's what it's always gonna be. And all you've got to do to join is to sing it with me as it comes around again on the guitar. With feeling. can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. Walk right in, it's around the back, just a half a mile from. You can't start singing loud just at the end if I quit singing. You would have thought after all this time you'd have learned by now. If you want to end war and stuff, you've got to learn to sing loud all the time so people can hear you. Now, I know this is a long song. Believe me, I know how long it is. And even on the record, when it come out, it was pretty long. What, 18 minutes, like I said, or something? I'm not sitting here trying to make it any longer. But I can feel it. I know there's people sitting in this very room tonight that don't believe that songs can change the world, or that songs can change the destiny of nations. I don't blame you. I wouldn't have thought so myself. Of course, I know something that some of you may not know, but I was reminded of it during the last election. See, I remembered back when Jimmy Carter was elected president, because I got an invitation to his inauguration, and I knew I had to go, because I knew it'd be the only one I ever got. Been right so far. But I went down to Washington, D.C. I'm not making this up now. This is real. I went down to Washington, and it's just like you see on TV, people partying and stuff, and everything was fine until along toward evening. Somebody come around, tapped me on the shoulder, and I turned around. And it was Chip Carter, the president's son. I said, hi, Chip. I recognized him. He was about my age. He said, Arlo, I've been looking everywhere for you. I said, Chip, how come? He said, Arlo, I've got something very important to tell you. And I said, Chip, what is it? He said, Arlo, we were moving our stuff into the White House, and in the Nixon Record Library, we found a copy of your record, Alice's Restaurant. I looked at Chip Carter. I looked deep into the man's soul. I said, Chip, was it open? And in slow motion, he nodded, yes, it had been opened. And I want you folks sitting here tonight to know that I did not think about that for a long time. Until just recently, when we was all thinking about Richard Nixon when he passed away. And I see some young people here that may not know. See, but Richard Nixon was the president of the United States. And he used to like to tape stuff. I mean, if you can imagine a world before VCRs and cassette decks was everywhere, you can imagine a man who was truly ahead of his time. And he taped everything that went on in the White House, and everything was fine until one day they started playing back the tapes. People found out what was going on in there. But it wasn't anything that was on any tape that got the man in trouble, so much as it was what he had erased from the tapes. And there was one particular famous gap in one of those tapes that I was thinking about one night when I said to myself, Arlo, how many things in the world are 18 minutes and 20 seconds long? Well, how many things in the world are exactly 18 minutes and 20 seconds long? Probably just a coincidence. But it's good enough for me. So when the song comes around again on the guitar, remember that songs can change the destiny of nations, even if it's only by coincidence. Have to know the words, have the feeling, and wait for it to come around again on the guitar. You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant, except in LA. So you can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. Walk right in, it's around the back, just a half a mile from the railroad track. And you can get anything you want.
Jim Croce from his album, I Got a Name. I learned the hard way every time. What a great song. And, of course, Jim Croce, who was killed in a plane crash in 1973, along with his lead guitar player, what was his name, Maurice Mühlhausen or something like that. And killer, tight stuff. If you can listen to some of the interplay between Jim Croce's rhythm guitar, and, of course, he studied jazz at Villanova. And then Maurice's lead guitar, where he bends his strings a lot and does all kinds of stuff, but it's so tight. And those guys had worked together for quite a few years. And anyway, both killed in a plane crash in the fall of 1973. And he had three mainstream albums out and some posthumously released stuff. And there you go, Jim Croce. And yeah, good stuff. You know what, we're going to take a little bit of a break. Yes, we are. Oh, before that, the Alice's Restaurant Masque Revisited. Just thinking about that, listening to that. And, of course, Arnold knows what it's all about and that it is nostalgic. And he knows why he's doing it. And he's done it several times. And again, if you were around in the 60s when the Alice's Restaurant original recording made it into the mainstream, it was one of the times when anti-establishment totally made it into the mainstream. Made for very interesting dynamics. I actually took a final in a history class in high school that was based on that. And that was the final. All we had to do was listen to Alice's Restaurant. And very interesting stuff. That's how people thought in those days. Taking the break, Inland Folk is a production of Northwest Public Radio on the campus of Washington State University. I'm your host, Dan Maurer. Coming right back. You just hang on, because... We are coming back. Oh, yes, we are.
Partly cloudy today and tonight with high temperatures today 69 in Moscow, 77 in Clarkston. Tonight's lows in the mid to upper 40s. Skies will become mostly cloudy tomorrow with high temperatures in the 70s to lower 80s. And Memorial Day should be mostly cloudy with a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms.
Nancy in Ellensburg loves A Prairie Home Companion and the classical music on Northwest Public Radio. She also enjoys the freedom to move around the house and keep listening, even when she's doing other things. If, like Nancy, you choose this station as your companion through the day, thanks so much for keeping us close.
Jeff Kaufman, I like this song. This is about, this is about the whole Reagan administration and some of those folks in the early 80s. I believe Mike Milken, wasn't he one of the Reagan officials in the Treasury? Or was it early Bush? I can't remember now. Anyway, this is a great song that Jeff Kaufman does. Like it a lot.
Michael Milken is my name. Junk bond market was my game.
It was my game.
Walking on easy street. Mm-hmm. Ivan, Marty, Dennis, and I. Walking on easy street. Mm-hmm. Played the inside trade and we were flying high.
Flying high.
Walking on easy street. Mm-hmm. I need to be greedy. Just fools get hurt along the way.
Along the way,
walking on easy street. Mm-hmm. We bought 'em and sold 'em and tore 'em apart.
Tore 'em apart,
walking on easy street. Mm-hmm. Made hostile takeovers a high art.
A high art,
walking on easy street. Mm-hmm. I need to be greedy. Front runners came to answer the call.
Answer the call.
Walking on easy street. Mm-hmm. But the Justice Department and the SEC.
The SEC.
Walking on easy street. Mm-hmm. Tracked down Levine's offshore company.
The company.
Walking on easy street. Mm-hmm. I need to be greedy. And they made me pay.
They made me pay.
Walking on easy street. Mm-hmm. 600 million, how I cried that day.
I cried that day.
Walking on easy street. Mm-hmm. Then the S&Ls crumbled from a dirty scam.
A dirty scam.
Walking on easy street. Mm-hmm. But I'm making big bucks, though I'm here in the slam.
Here in the slam.
Walking on easy street.
Fine. to my town, walking in an easy seat.
Well, at least till I played out the back nine.
The back nine, walking in an easy seat.
I need to be greedy.
I need to be greedy.
I need to be greedy.
I need to make money when I want to.
I want
to fill my house with orders, walking in an easy seat.
It's all the hills and far away. It's all the hills and far away. It's all the hills and far away. The wind has blown my plaid away. Jockey met with Jeannie Fair between the dawn and the day. But Jockey knew his full care since Jenny Stone has heard away. Although she promised to be true, she proven has a lass unkind, which does make poor Jockey rue. That Terry rude a fickle mind. It's all the hills and far away. It's all the hills and far away. It's all the hills and far away. The wind has blown up by the wall.
Jockey was a bonny lad. The Terry was born in Scotia Fair. But new the lad, he does run mad. St. Jenny causes his despair. Young Jockey was a piper's son.
He fell in love when he was young, and all the tunes that he could play was how the hills and far away.
First I saw my Jeannie's face, she seemed so fair, so full grace. With mickle joy, my heart was filled, that's no alas, when sorrow killed. Oh, were she but as true as fair, t'would put an end to my despair. Instead, oh, that she is unkind, and wavers like the winter wind. It's all the hills and far away, it's all the hills and far away, it's all the hills and far away. The wind has blown up by the wall. How was my heart to fall in love when the dusted fate was true? How was my fate to curtain me? What has my constant heart betrayed? Since she is false, why adore? Ne'er will I trust a woman more. From all her charms I'll flee away, and on my pipes I'll sweetly play. It's all the hills and far away. It's all the hills and far away. It's all the hills and far away. The wind has blown my plaid away. It's all the hills and far away. It's all the hills and far away. It's all the hills and far away. The wind has blown my plaid away.
for the world is full of troubles and anxious in its sleep. Come away, O human child, to the waters and the wild, with a fairy hand in hand, for the world's more full of weeping than he can understand. Thank you.
Simmersha has cheered the drooping little flower. To the breathing woodbine bark, that's something new, my dearie.
Lassie, needled in twig locks, bonnie lassie, helpless lassie, wilt thou maybe tend the flocks, and wilt thou be my dearie? As Cynthia lights with silver ray, the weary shearers hamward way, through yellow waving fields we'll stray, and talk o' love, my dearie.
Lassie, with the limp white locks, bonnie lassie, heartless lassie, wilt thou winnie tend the flocks, and wilt thou be my dearie?
Thank you.
indeed. Kate Rusby, you haven't heard from this album in a long, long time. The album is called Sleepless. It was her second album. It's got some great stuff on it. Kate Rusby from Leeds in Yorkshire. And she doesn't fly, you know. She has a fear of flying. That's the title of one of her albums, actually. And she doesn't do the States very often anymore. She's kind of a... there hasn't been much from her in quite a while. She did an album of her own material, which wasn't all that good. And then there's been an album, kind of a greatest hits with all kinds of cool people on it, including Jerry Douglas and folks like that, Mary Chapin Carpenter, a lot of folks like that. And anyway, the point is Kate Rusby is in a kind of a transitional period, I think. But what a wonderful singer, and what a wonderful guitar player, and what a great voice. Kate Rusby. And before that, the Tannehills, Lassie with the Lint White Locks. We're going to be back for the third hour of the show. You hang on. Inland Folks, a production of Northwest Public Radio on the campus of Washington State University. I'm your host, Dan Marr. We're coming right back. You just hang on, because we are coming back. Hang on now.
When a hoard of Viking treasure was unearthed recently in Yorkshire, I thought, let's build the Thistle and Shamrock with a hall of Nordic music, blended perfectly with the Celtic sound, as the Vikings no doubt intended. If you don't join us, we'll come and get you.
Be sure to join Fiona Ritchie in just about an hour at 2 o'clock. For the Thistle and Shamrock here on your NPR and classical music station, Northwest Public Radio. I'm Bruce Bradbury. It's 1 o'clock. Northwest Public Radio, KRFA 91.7 Moscow, KNWV 90.5 Clarkston, KNWO 90.1 Cottonwood, also on translators K274BK 102.7 Kamiakuski, K265DX 100.9 Enterprise Oregon, and K272DO 102.3 Orofino.
Listeners Philip and Mary tune in to Northwest Public Radio all the time. He likes the classical music. She likes Car Talk. Thanks to them and thousands of other contributing members, we're able to provide you with a wide range of programs, from the harmonious to the hilarious. If you're a member, thank you for your support.